Bhagavad Gita. Prakalpya appointing Vatsam calf. Kapilam, the great sage Kapila. Siddha, the inhabitants of Siddha Loka. Sankalpana, Mahim, proceeding from will. Siddhim, yogic perfection. Navasi, in the sky. Vidyam, knowledge. Cha, also. Yay, those who. Cha, also. Vidyadara adayaha, the inhabitants of Vidyadara Loka, and so on. Translation. After this, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, as well as the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka, transform the great sage Kapila into a calf, and making the whole sky into a pot, they milked out specific yogic mystic powers, beginning with anima. Indeed, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka acquired the art of flying in the sky. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The inhabitants of both Siddha Loka and Vidyadhara Loka are naturally endowed with mystic yogic powers by which they not only can fly in outer space without a vehicle, but can also fly from one planet to another simply by exerting their will. Just as fish can swim within water, the residents of Vidyadhara Loka can swim in the ocean of air. As far as the inhabitants of Siddha Loka are concerned, they are endowed with all mystic powers. Yogis in this planet practice the eightfold yogic mysticism, namely Yam Niyam Asana, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. By regularly practicing the yogic processes one after another, the yogis attain various perfections. They can become smaller than the smallest, heavier than the heaviest, etc. They can even manufacture a planet, get whatever they like, and control whatever man they want. All the residents of Siddha Loka are naturally endowed with these mystic yogic powers. It is certainly a very wonderful thing if we see a person on this planet flying in the sky without a vehicle. But in Vidyadhara Loka, such flying is as commonplace as a bird's flying in the sky. Similarly, in Siddha Loka, all the inhabitants are great yogis, perfect in mystic powers. The name of Kapila Muni is significant in this verse because he was the expounder of the Sankhya philosophical system, and his father, Kardama Muni, was a great yogi and mystic. Indeed, Kardama Muni prepared a great airplane which was as large as a small town and had various gardens, palatial buildings, servants, and maidservants. With all this paraphernalia, Kapila Deva's mother, Devahuti, and his father, Kardama Muni, traveled all over the universes and visited different planets. So, Kalpya Vatsam Kapilam Siddha Sankalpanamahim Siddhin Navasi Vidhangcha Yecha Vidyadara Dayaha. So, Om Ganati Vidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So this whole discussion of mystic powers is actually quite interesting. And just one point is that Prabhupada actually said, we all have mystic powers. And he gave a very interesting example. He said how the nails grow. You understand? Everybody has nails and hair. And so it's just mystical, you know, how this comes out of skin. You know, the hard thing comes out of the soft thing. And the hair comes out of the head. It's all very wonderful. However, what's being referred to here are deliberate mystic powers. I mean, we can't make our hair grow deliberately. If we could, none of us would be getting bald as we get older. They have this thing called pattern baldness, where men, You know, you have that too, Mario, where the sides actually start to get bald. And the ladies, they have traumatic experiences when they use their comb on their hair and a whole bunch of hair comes off with the comb. So it's not a in other words, the point I'm making, it may be a mystic power, but it's not a deliberate mystic power. We can't exercise our will with it. Okay, hair grow. Like any of you travel in airplanes, you'll see that many of the advertisements they have in the magazines for the airplanes are for hair growing solutions. Some people say they use laser beams. You know, they have this thing with laser beams you're supposed to rub on your head. Other people have different solutions. Other people have injections of different hormones. And probably none of them work. So you don't have you can't exercise. You can't make yourself young again. I mean, very few of us have mystic powers. Of course, a pure devotee automatically has mystic powers. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, if I remember correctly, there's a whole list of mystic powers and also how to get them. So any of you want to get mystic powers, study that part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it all involves all those different methodologies involve some form of meditation or prayer or connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So these are called right-handed tantra. Because tantra is very interesting. Most people think tantra refers to tantric people, you know, who do all sorts of things like eating your food out of a skull. Like some devotee comes to prasadam with a skull, and he fills it with the skull with prasadam. He uses a spoon made out of someone's bone and eats it. So that's generally you hear the word tantra, and you think of something like that. But tantra, basically, the word means to connect in Sanskrit, something that connects you with a particular goal or vision. Something you want to achieve. So there's what's called left-handed tantra and right-handed tantra. And left-handed tantra is the stuff that we just mentioned, you know, all the ooh stuff, you know, the ghosts and the demons and all those other stuff. And just like we also have tantra, like in different instructions, the Narada Pancharatra, that's tantra. You know, that gives you instructions how to worship the deities. And we have a nectar of devotion, you know, instructions how to perform devotional service. There's nothing wrong with tantra. But the left-handed tantra, which they're called tantrics, perform, they have regulative principles just like we have regulative principles. Of course, they only have five regulative principles. And they call them... We spoke about this before, I think when we were talking about the history of Indian religion, we gave that course. They have the five M's. See if I remember them all. One is mudra. And Prabhupada talks about that. I'm not going to say exactly what Prabhupada said because it's so heavy that I can't say it in Bhagavatam class. But you take a sitting position or some sort of form with the hand that's obscene, or you do take a sitting position that's obscene. And you can look it up in the Bhagavatam. And it's, as I said, it's just too heavy a thing for me to say in class. He said mudraksha or something like that, that they call that. But anyway, so the first one is the mudra, some obscene thing with the hand or with your body. That's mudra. And... the next regulative principle, the tantrics, and the tantrics can achieve mystic powers too. You know, there's the black mystic powers. There's like a black magic and white magic. Even in the Western world, is I remember what was that? The Wizard of Oz. You ever seen the Wizard of Oz? There was the Wicked Witch of the West, and there was a Good Witch. I think she was the Witch of the East or something like that. I don't remember. The Witch of the West was killed with water. Remember? You don't remember. Just see how I remember all these nonsense things from my childhood. I wish I remembered Krishna as well. So even in the West, you have an idea of like white witches or black witches or tantrics. So anyway, so the tantrics. So the second one, is the second thing that tantrics have to do to get power. Tantrics can get mystic power. But it's not devotional mystic power that's described in the 11th canto, chapter 15. It's like, you know, Ravana's power, he was able to do so many things, change his form, right? Ravana was able to look like a Brahmin when he stole Sita Devi. And the Rakshasas, you read the Ramayana, the Rakshasas could sometimes appear like birds, they could fly in the sky. Other times they appeared like monkeys, so they could enter into the monkey army and try to spy on what was happening. And when they did that, they were discovered by Vibhishan, because Vibhishan knew all the Rakshasa arts, and he knew that they were doing that. And they were beaten by the real monkeys. And eventually Lord Ram let them go, because Lord Ram is Kripa Sindhu. He is actually very, very merciful. So anyway, so talking about the five regulative principles of the tantrics, the left-handed tantrics. And another one is madan. That means intoxication. In other words, instead, like we have no intoxication, they have yes intoxication. At least they're more positive than we are. So you must take intoxication. And you see this in India. Sometimes we go on pilgrimage and there's tantrics there. Even in the holy place like Govardhan. One time I was circumambulating a temple of Lord Shiva. And right behind the temple there were some tantrics smoking hashish or marijuana. I don't know the difference. But anyway, they were doing something. They had this big rolled thing and they were smoking it. And I walked behind and they were very respectful and hospitable. They said, Maharaj, would you like some Mahaprasad? And I said, today's Ekadashi, you know. And the other day, you know, I didn't want to hurt their feelings. But they were, you see this regularly, they're smoking. And they're passing it around to each other. Now, Prabhupada said that's where the hippies in America, and also you've got hippies here in Europe too. People also smoke marijuana here in Europe, right? No? No, you're all pure and everything. So, like in Amsterdam. Prabhupada said that's where they got it from India, from the so-called sadhus, the tantrics, who would smoke marijuana, and then came to the West. And people thought it was spiritual, like they thought it was spiritual. And Prabhupada said it's an illusion within an illusion. It's not something spiritual. You're actually an illusion within. It's like playing a video game in which you take the part of a character, which is an illusory character. You're already an illusion because you think you're the body. And then you're in a double illusion because you're playing a video game. Right? So, anyway, so you have to take intoxication. Hope no one takes this class out of context when I say you have to take intoxication. You have to take intoxication. And the next one is maitunya. That's the third M. Maitunya means you have to have illicit sex of the worst kind. You know, I'm not going to describe that. This is Bhagavatam class. Next one is mamsa. You have to eat meat. Just like nowadays, there's this very popular diet that people are following. It's called the paleo diet. You ever heard of this before? You know what I'm talking about? That it's based on the improper understanding of the so-called theory of evolution that says that we were actually meant to be hunter-gatherers. You know, that's how we were. The reason we're getting sick nowadays, this is their theory. The reason we get sick nowadays is that we're eating an unnatural diet of grains and things like that. Actually, our real diet is to be in the forest, just collecting from the trees, killing the animals and chewing on them after we kill them. So this is a very popular type of diet now. It's called a paleo, in reference to, you know, Aborigines and people like that. And they keep parts of animals in their refrigerator and eat them raw. That's very popular. So that's the tantrics do that too. You have to eat meat. And the final one is matsya. You also have to eat fish, not just meat. So if you follow these five regulative principles, you're not guaranteed to get mystic powers, though. You're guaranteed to be in ignorance. But if you follow these five regulative principles and you do some austerity at the same time, I mean, you see demons doing austerity. not uncommon. Like Ravana, he was performing austerity. He was offering his heads, practically he was cutting his heads off and offering them to Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. And then you have other demons who cut their flesh off, like Vrikasura. He was cutting his flesh off and offering to Lord Shiva, and then he wanted the benediction of whosever head he touched. That's mystic power. Whosever head you touched would split into a million pieces, and then he tried to use that benediction to kill Lord Shiva and take away Parvati. So you see the demons, they actually perform austerities for the purpose of getting these powers. I mean, you can get powers by performing austerities, whether you're a demon or a devotee. So that's the demoniac side of things. So as far as the, this is a very interesting subject for me at least, as far as the devotional mystic powers, they're listed in the 11th canto, chapter 15, and the eight main ones are mentioned here by, some of them mentioned by Prabhupada. There's the anima city. Anima means you become very, very small. You can enter, just like Hanuman. Hanuman, he was trying to spy on Lanka, tried to find out Sita Devi. So he went to Lanka, and in order to enter Lanka, he made himself very small. But there was this lady who was previously from the higher planets. She was somehow or other been cursed to be the guardian of Lanka. Her name was Lankini. And she saw this little tiny monkey who was about this small trying to enter Lanka. She said, "Where are you going?" And Hanuman said, "I just want to look around." And she said, "No one enters Lanka. No one enters Lanka without permission." And she says, I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to kill you." And she picked him up in the hand. And he says, "I want to give you something first, a present." He says, "Mushtika." That means a fist. So, boom. He has a little tiny Hanuman, about this small. Punches her in the mouth. And she starts bleeding. She says, "Well, I guess that's it for me." Because it had been predicted that when a monkey would enter Lanka, would actually hit Lankini, that Lanka would be destroyed. So Hanuman, when he entered Lanka, he was able to make himself very small. And also to have the other mystic power, the second one is Lagima. Lagima means make yourself very light. Of course, especially Hanuman could do that. Actually, it turned into a talk about Hanuman today, so you see who I like. So especially Hanuman could do that because he was Vayuputra. He was the son of Vayu, the wind god. So he made himself very light, and he was flying around and looking all over just to find Sita. Eventually, of course, he found her in the Ashok Grove. And that's the second mystic power, is Lagima, make yourself very light. The third one is Prapti City. Prapti means you can reach out and get anything you want. That means if you want to get money, you can reach out to the bank without and you'll never get arrested for being a bank robber. You just reach out to the bank. Take the money and just give it to Krishna. I've been trying to get that power for a long time. It hasn't worked. So that's called Prapti City. Next one is Mahima City. Mahima means you make yourself very heavy or big. Mahima means big, heavy, tremendous, like that is what it means in Sanskrit. And so let's see. Oh, yeah, Krishna illustrated that power when he, because Krishna is the master of mystics. When Trinavarta, who had this Lagima city, he was a demon. He had, like I said, tantric powers. So Trinavarta, who was the whirlwind demon, made himself very light, carried Krishna in the air. And what did Krishna do? Krishna just made himself so heavy that basically and Trinavarta had to fall to the ground, and Krishna came to the ground too. So that's called Mahima, Mahima City. And there's even another instance where Mother Yashoda couldn't lift Krishna because he made himself very heavy. So the Mahima city is actually, and also Hanuman exhibited this city. Sometimes he would make himself very, very big. One time he was, also very, very heavy. One time, two stories about that. One time he was fighting with some Rakshasas, and the Rakshasa looked up and he said, "I can't see Hanuman." He said, "I just see like something round." And Hanuman said, "That's my kneecap." And then another time in the Mahabharat, you have Bhimsen, who comes across Hanuman and he can't even lift Hanuman's tail. So that means Hanuman made himself so heavy he couldn't do that. And so the next one is Ishitva city. That means the ability to create or destroy things, even to destroy or create planets. And an example of that is Vishvamitra Muni, who is trying to get this person, Trishanku, to go to the heavenly planets. And Trishanku had been previously cursed to be a Chandala. He looked really bad. And so he actually was able to create a whole universe of heavenly planets utilizing this mystic power. It's interesting, isn't it? You can create planets. I remember reading about this before I joined the movement. I thought, wow, I got to join this movement. You learn all these things, you know, create planets, have anything you want. And the next one is Vishitva city, which is to control the material elements. In other words, you can make things, you can make other things lighter or heavier. You can sort of break the rules of nature. Not really break them, but you could appear to. Next one is Prakamya city, not to be frustrated in any desire. Any desire you have is automatically fulfilled. That's something like the that popular book, The Secret. You've heard about that? No, you haven't heard that. That's a very popular book that, I don't know if, of course, you've read that, Manjari, but the other devotees haven't. That's whatever you desire, you'll get. And there was even a movie. Anyone seen the movie? You've seen the movie. You haven't seen the movie. You should watch these things. That it showed people who wanted a sports car. And they were just desiring it very strongly. They were even sitting in their chair in their living room doing the shifting. You remember that? And then they woke up the next morning. There was a sports car outside their door. So that's Prakamya City. People want that, but you really have to perform austerities. Anyway, and the last one is Kamavasayita City. That means you can assume any shape you want. And from the Ramayana, we have that, of course, that's also tantric. Surpanaka. Surpanaka means someone with long nails. Naka. Long, curved nails, actually. And so Surpanaka, when she saw Lord Ram in the Dandakaranya forest, she became attracted to Lord Ram. But normally, she didn't look so beautiful. She had a big belly, it's described in the Valmiki Ramayana. You understand? Like a beer belly? Like you go to Munich and you see this? Munich? Where they have their beer fest? Oktoberfest? So you see that a lot of people, not only Germany, but everywhere, people walking around with these big bellies and men look pregnant. So, anyway, so she thought, I have to make myself beautiful. So she all of a sudden turned herself into a very beautiful girl and said, Ram, I love you. And then Ram, of course, said, you know, I already have a wife and she's here. It wouldn't work out, so you can marry Lakshman. And his wife's not with him. And then she went to Lakshman and Lakshman said, why should you become married to me? I'm just a servant. You have to serve that Ram and Sita all the time. And then she went back to Ram. And eventually she said to Ram that, that's an interesting statement. She said, soon you will forget that lady with the sunken belly. You know, because Sita had a very thin waist. In Sanskrit, it's called Madhyama. You know, very thin waist. It's described that sometimes ladies that you could actually put your hands around the way. Not that you should do that, but anyway. That's called Majima. So she said, you'll forget that lady with the sunken belly, because she had a big belly. And then she tried to kill Sita Devi. She manifested her real form, and then Lakshman gave her a nosectomy. That means he cut off the nose and he cut off the ears. So there's that instance of the ability to be able to change one's form. Hanuman also had that too. Sometimes he could appear as a Brahmin, sometimes he could appear as a monkey, sometimes he could appear as an ordinary human being. And actually, practically all the next verse talks about Kim Purusha Loka. Kim Purusha Loka is where Hanuman is. And the residents of Kim Purusha Loka, Siddha Loka, they automatically have these powers. And the yakshas, but the rakshasas automatically have many of these powers too. They're just born with these different powers. So there's several instances. And also there's secondary mystic powers that are mentioned in the 11th canto. I'll read some of them. One is the freedom, being able to be free from hunger and thirst. And some devotees can have that power too. Seeing far away or hearing far away or two other secondary mystic powers. Move the body at the speed of the mind. Assume any form you want. That's also one of the primary mystic powers. Entering into other bodies and taking them over. Wow. Interesting, isn't it? Dying when you desire. Grandfather Bhishma had that power. Seeing the demigods dancing with the apsaras. It's better than going to the opera house here. having great determination or having your orders fulfilled. Those are the 10 secondary mystic powers. So a devotee, getting to the point, a devotee automatically has mystic powers. A pure devotee automatically has these mystic powers. But in most cases, he doesn't exercise these mystic powers. Some cases you do, like with Lord Jesus Christ, he walked on water, and he was able to bring people back from the dead. So in most cases, the devotee won't exhibit those mystic powers. The reason is that people would follow the devotee for the wrong reasons. But a devotee exhibits the real mystic power, the real miracle, which is to change people's consciousness. Or as Prabhupada said, changing hippies into happies. In other words, transforming the consciousness. And I've experienced that in Krishna consciousness, of course. Haven't become completely happy yet, but at least I'm not a hippie. But I've experienced that in Krishna consciousness, that people change their mentality if they follow the process. Just like in achieving these mystic powers, there's specific processes. So in the practice of Krishna consciousness, there's a specific process which is not simply external. If we simply perform devotional service externally, that's called niyam agraha, just the rules and regulations without the internal aspect. But performing devotional service, as stated by Lord Kapiladeva, the devotional service is performed with the subtle body, with the mind and the heart. In other words, we perform our activities for Krishna externally, and internally, we're doing it with a spirit of love. As Rupa Goswami says in the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the famous verse, nutshell verse, Anyabhilashita Chinyam Gyanakarma Anavatam, Anukul Yena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttamam. The devotional service, of course, he gives a negative definition first, which I'm not going to talk about right now. But the positive definition has three aspects. One is to be active in serving Krishna. The second one is to do what Krishna wants. Not simply do what you want to do for Krishna. And the third one is to do it with a spirit of devotion. So in other words, as we're executing our service, we should be doing our service with the idea of pleasing Krishna. I mean, for example, I give the example sometimes when I'm taking care of my deities. I have Giriraj. And so I'm making a food offering for Giriraj. So, of course, I offer what Giriraj likes. I don't offer unofferable foods. I've never offered meat, fish, or eggs to Giriraj. I'm not a tantric. So we do it actively. But sometimes we catch ourselves just doing things ritualistically. In other words, just saying the prayers, you know, just going, Nama Om Vishnupadaya, ringing the bell. And then the mind is thinking at the same time, I hope the offering's over soon so I can get on with my real life. But your real life should be thinking about worshiping Krishna for the idea of pleasing Krishna. In other words, while you're saying the offering, while you're doing your devotional service, you should be thinking, Krishna, I hope you enjoy this. I'm offering you food. You should be thinking of what you're doing when you're doing it. And that's devotional service, not just external, but it's performed with the subtle body. And when you do that, then the subtle body, the material subtle body becomes dissolved. In other words, the anarthas become eradicated. And your spiritual mind and intelligence become very, very prominent. So that's a transformation. That's real mystic power. That's a demonstration of Srila Prabhupada's, Krishna's mystic power to transform your consciousness. And that's really what we're interested in. Not in these other mystic powers that bewilder one. When one has some power, prestige, intelligence and things in this world, these things can be very bewildering, as Queen Kunti says. Janmaishwarya Shutasha Shivir. Even if one has good birth, one has beauty, one has learning, one has wealth, one gets very bewildered with these things if they're not engaged in Krishna's service. So we shouldn't be hankering for these mystic powers. We should be hankering for the power, the mysticism, the real magic of transforming our consciousness into pure Krishna consciousness. So any questions or comments? I got on too long. All right. Yeah.
These yogis for one straight mystic powers, they said they have them in hair.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
That's tantric, yeah.
Yeah. How, like, are really all these mystic powers in their hair?
Not always, but some of the yogis, yeah.
If they cut it, they don't have...
Well, you have that story as Vivek Shena, who had some mystic powers. This is in Bengal. Orissa, I'm sorry, it was in Orissa. And because of those mystic powers, he proclaimed himself to be Vishnu. And then he said, I have a friend here, and his name is Brahma. And another friend, his name is Shiva. So we have, the three guna avatars together, you know, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So he had these mystic powers. It's even described that he could get flames coming from his head. He could mystify people in the sense of controlling their minds. And people were scared of him. It happens. And then what happened is that, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur arrested him. He was the only one with enough courage to arrest this rascal. Took him to court. And I forget how many people they had to have guarding him. And it was like hundreds of soldiers. And most of them had to be Muslims. They were guarding this guy in prison. And the court case took many days, over 10 days. And during that period of time, many things happened that illustrated the mystic yogi's power. One thing is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter got extremely sick and almost died during, I think it was the sixth day or something like that of the court case. And then the last day of the court case, Bhaktivinoda Thakur came down with such a high fever he could hardly walk. He had to drag himself into the court. And then he pronounced sentence on this guy. And this English gentleman, I forget the name of the English gentleman, maybe he remembers. Anyway, after Bhaktivinoda Thakur pronounced sentence on the guy, this English guy who was working in the court, whatever it was, he cut the hair off immediately of this rascal. And the rascal fell to the floor. He had no more power. He had been fasting for many days, performing austerities too, because all his power he kept in the hair. Not that all yogis keep power in the hair. That's not stated.
They all kind of have long hair.
Yeah, but some yogis can be bald. It's not that they all have to keep power in the hair. That's a tantric thing, where they keep the power in the hair. Some of them, I mean, there's stories, what was that, about Mahi Ravana in the Ramayana. He kept his power in a jewel, in a different places like that. So, you know, they have different ways of keeping the power. It's not that every tantric yoga has to have long hair. But it's one of the means that that they use. I mean, sometimes devotees have long hair too.
I was thinking that maybe the who is like cutting hair and it's bald, they are not attached to these things, like getting some powers.
Well, someone who's cutting hair, like Prabhupada said, he has a cool head. I remember that time. I was with Prabhupada at that time. This one reporter asked Prabhupada, and she was dressed, let's say, with a very short skirt on. You know, what they call mini skirts? I haven't seen people wear them nowadays. Anyway, so she was dressed in a mini skirt, and she asked Prabhupada, why do you shave your head? And Prabhupada said, it's better to have a cool head and warm legs. And of course, everyone, you know, whenever Prabhupada said something, everyone would go, Jai Prabhupada. It was like amazing, you know. Jai Prabhupada, and they'd all laugh, and this poor girl was just like, ah, you know, you had like 100 people laughing at her. So we cut our hair because hair symbolizes or it increases the attachment that one has for this body, you know, the decoration of this body. And of course, the ladies, they don't necessarily have to cut their hair, but Prabhupada one time, several times, he said one of the main businesses of ladies, and please don't get offended when I say this, is combing their hair. And I remember before I joined the movement, I had longer hair, I think, than any of the ladies here. Just like this, such as that Baba. And I spent a lot of time combing it, training it, looking at it, curling it. And then when it went off, I felt a lot better. It was like a relief, like getting rid of my false ego. I'm not advocating the ladies should shave their heads. You know, that's Prabhupada didn't want that really. I mean, it'd look weird. People come to the Hare Krishna temple and all ladies with bald heads. It's not good for preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, we'd look like a bunch. Anyway, I won't tell you what we look like, but we would look really bad. But in general, we should minimize these bodily things, especially on the codicil, which is today. It's not that we should maximize. I remember when I was young in the bathroom, there were so many lotions we had for putting on the hair. Everyone remember that? No. There were so many like hair dressing, combs, and sprays. Just such a botheration. I felt liberated the first time I cut my hair off. It's like, wow, why was I so attached to that thing? And sometimes we would trick people to get rid of their hair. In the early days of the movement, people would join, they didn't want to get rid of their hair. And so we would say, it just needs a little trim. So we would trim on one side, and that side was shorter than the other side. So, we have to equal it on the other side. So then we equal it on the other side, and then that side got too short. And so, well, we have to equal it on the other side. And so back and forth, and eventually the guy was bald. So that was one way that we had of shaving people's hair off. Anyway. Yeah. So any other questions or comments or arguments about any of the points anyone would like to get those mystic powers? Be truthful. It'd be nice, isn't it? You'd use it for Krishna. So, I guess that's it. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai, Gaura Prema Nanda, Hari Hari Bhava.